and welcome to Eggpod Express with me, Chris Shaw. Eggpod Express takes a jaunty stroll through 1960s music magazines with a potpourri of delicious guests. To read along with us, the magazine's online at iamtheeggpod.com, where you'll also find an exclusive playlist of this week's top 30 singles. To support this podcast and to access any bonus content, please subscribe to patreon.com/eggpod. In this episode, I'm joined by BAFTA Award winner, Writers Guild of Great Britain treasurer, and recently elected Vice President of the Federation of Screenwriters in Europe. Hello and congratulations, Gail Reynards.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's an honour to be here, and it really is, because I love your podcasts.
Oh, thank you. It's an amazing achievement. And the FSC is a big deal, isn't it?
It is, and the Writers Guild of Great Britain is the trade union for writers in Britain, and it's lovely to be surrounded by so many writers, because heaven knows we have enough fights to fight right now.
Yes. So we're going to talk about a publication from July 1967. So could you take us back to Montreal in July 1967? What was happening with you at that time?
Well, I was all of 14. I had been a committed Beatlemaniac since I was about 10. And 1967 was a transformative year for Montreal and for Canada, because we had Expo 67 in Montreal. You cannot realize how small and provincial it was growing up in Montreal. And apologies to anyone from Montreal, but you know it's true. It was very small, what I called Little House on the Prairie, a lot of, you know, fields and things. And basically, I did walk 2 miles to school through blizzards. And it was also, which will play into this, because it was Quebec. The province was very, very Catholic, and which meant there were a lot of restrictions imposed on teenagers. But in 1967, a few different things happened. It was the anniversary of the foundation of Canada, or the Dominion. Canada had been a Dominion up until then, and with 1967, it was no longer a Dominion. It became, we had the Canadian flag. The Union Jack with a small maple leaf was replaced by the maple leaf flag. And Pierre Trudeau, Trudeau Major, as opposed to Justin Trudeau, Trudeau Minor, became the Prime Minister. And up till then, we had some very worthy, stuffy Prime Ministers. And this young, charming, brilliant man stepped into it. And he brought Canada into a new century. And Expo 67. So it was still reasonably provincial, but with Expo 67, the world came to our door. It was a very exciting time to grow up. And we also had a lot of, we could get American television shows if you had cable, and we had cable. And basically, it was very British still, the English-speaking part of Canada. So we had a lot of the British television shows about 10 years later. But we had Hancock and the Goons. And then, you know, 2 years later would have been Monty Python.
Suddenly, though, Montreal and Canada have found an identity and reputation that owes nothing to the past. A billion-dollar spectacle to celebrate the country's centenary of Confederation. Expo 67, the greatest show on earth. On a man-made site in the middle of the St. Lawrence River, an estimated 50 million will have visited the largest world fair ever. Ironically, the British and French have neighboring pavilions. But political differences need not concern those who can travel from Russia to Ontario in one breathtaking mini-rail ride.
So we're going to go back to the first week of July 1967. As you say, yeah, Canada was celebrating the 100th anniversary of the 1867 British North America Act, which served as Canada's constitution for over 100 years. Belated congratulations, Gail.
On behalf of Canada, I thank you.
So what else is happening? The Nigerian Civil War erupting. Yes. Nigerian forces invaded the sectionist state of Biafra.
Yes, and it was, they had a blockade and a couple of million people starved. Incredible to think all that was happening. John Lennon got very into that, and especially later. Mm. John Lennon, bless, got into a lot of the right causes.
Yeah. Operation Buffalo was taking place. It's resulted in the worst one-day loss for Marines in Vietnam due to the PAVN 90th Regiment ambushing the 1st Battalion 9th Marines. killing 84, wounding 190, and leaving 9 missing. What was the talk about Vietnam and Montreal at the time?
Well, Canada has always been a very tolerant, pacifist country. And the immediate effect, which I noticed more 2 years later when I went to university, was we had a lot of draft dodgers coming over the borders. And it was fantastic, which might have been a little late, but it was around this time that the American president, especially when Nixon came in, was very angry about Canada accepting draft dodgers, you know, sort of. And Pierre Trudeau, being the wise man he was, thought about it. And he had a new law, whatever, passed that any American seeking refuge as a draft dodger would be given immediate residency in Canada.
Wow.
So that was a pretty strong statement to make.
Yes.
But what we see now, Canada still is a very welcoming nation and holds its own.
Yes, under challenging circumstances.
Elbows up, I believe, is the saying.
So what was happening in the UK? Well, first British colour TV broadcast on BBC Two.
Oh, I remember our first colour telly, Bonanza in colour.
Wow.
Pa and the Boys. And it's been pointed out, Pa was the same age as the Boys, but nobody mentioned it.
No. And have a guess what it was on the BBC that was broadcast.
In colour?
Mm.
Oh, my.
It's July.
I have no idea. Was it the first Come Dancing or whatever it was called originally?
Wimbledon.
Oh, how glorious. If you want to see green now, you can.
You can, yeah, all the colours. You've got the men's single match between Cliff Drysdale and Roger Taylor. Not that one. And that's thanks to controller at the time, David Attenborough.
Oh, yes, the brilliant David. Whatever happened to him?
Who knows? And this week, premiering on ITV, News at 10. But yeah, overall, so you get the idea of the tension of the times, and you've got the contrast between sort of major global conflict on one hand, but on the other side, you've got this sudden explosion of colour, pop culture and fashion. It's a strange, strange time.
It was, but remember, what we didn't have was the internet. So it wasn't 24/7 news that makes you hyperventilate every moment that you can. You had news, maybe, you know, the evening news on the television, if you watched it, if your parents did. But you were aware of the headlines of Vietnam especially, and it was awful, and you knew it was awful. And we did do, even when I was a kid at school, we had little peace protests.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah. So we were very aware. And we also had it was a great school, and although it was strict academically, the teachers were young and liberal, and they gave us books probably that you can't read now, To Kill a Mockingbird, Black Like Me, and all this, also all the civil rights stuff. So yes, we grew up very aware, which was fantastic.
Brace yourself for it and prepare to meet, in some sort of action, a hippie. This is history, all right. This is what they call a love-in. The bead manufacturers say they'll have switched to baby toys in 6 months' time, but now this is what's happening.
So the publication we're talking about today is Rave magazine. And Gail, you were saying that this was one of your regular music magazines at the time.
It was one of my regulars, but it wasn't my favourite, which is why I'm trying to re-examine it from an adult point of view. My favourite was Fab magazine.
Oh, okay.
You know, because, and also, again, remembering in Canada, we didn't get it when you did. We got it a few weeks later because it was shipped out. And the excitement of running, it was, I think, a Wednesday after school to the local shop to see whether they got in Fab and Rave. And if it was a blizzard, if something happened and it didn't come in, you couldn't get it for another week.
Oh.
And that was really heartbreaking. But then the next week, you could buy two.
Yeah.
But since I was a huge Beatlemaniac, Fab, when I was 14, suited me. But Rave, anything that tied us to the swinging 60s, and indeed the summer of love was manna from heaven.
After all the jacks are in the boxes, and the clowns have all gone to bed, you can hear happiness staggering on down the street, footprints dressed in red. The wind whispers clearly.
Records. A Rave was a monthly publication launched in February 1964 by Don Wedge, who'd previously been a writer for the New Musical Express. It was published by George Nunes and was designed to target young women with photos, posters, interviews, fashion and beauty tips and film reviews. And it had a really strong lineup of respected female journalists, so including Kathy McGowan, Ready Steady Go fame, now married to Michael Ball, journalist Maureen O'Grady, who we'll be talking a lot about in this, and future Agony aunt Claire Rayner started out here as well. And as well as that, we've got a highly respected journalist and author, Jeremy Pascal. He regularly wrote for Rave. And it was edited by Terry Hornet, who later went on to edit Petticoat magazine and founded Carlton Publishing. It cost 2 shillings and 6 pence, which was about 5 times more expensive than its competitors, mainly due to the fact that it was printed on top quality paper, usually ran for about 80 pages and was packed with adverts. And the first office was based in Kingsway, across the road from the studios of Ready, Steady, Go. And apparently every Friday the staff would regularly decamp and head over to join in the fun. But this issue, front page, we have a picture of Jimi Hendrix, along with a photo of a model wearing apparently a Roberta Roma dress and hat that was available to buy in a tin can.
Oh.
So high fashion and disposable culture in a nutshell.
It was one. I love all the clothes. There isn't anything from this magazine that I wouldn't want the clothes now. And you were saying about disposable fashion. The dress in a tin, which was nice, don't get it mistaken for the beans. But there was also, remember, paper dresses.
I've seen footage.
Yeah, that you would wear once or twice and throw away. Also paper underwear.
Mm.
Yes. I suppose one could keep, ladies would keep it in their handbag.
Yeah.
But it was the fun of a paper thing, but I didn't want to buy a dress if I fell in love with it to throw it away after a wear or two.
No.
But it was also Jimi Hendrix is on the cover. And I had the pleasure of seeing in auction Jimi Hendrix trousers.
Of course you did. Did you put in a vid?
No, they were so small. The man must have been, his waist size must have been zero. Because it was the tiniest waist and the tightest looking trousers I'd ever seen. But at least I saw them. I was in the same room as Jimi Hendrix trousers.
Yeah, because again, I mentioned already, Maureen O'Grady says it was her who argued that Rave should have Jimi Hendrix on the front cover, as according to her, IPC at the time had an unwritten policy that black faces didn't sell magazines.
How charming.
Yeah. And if so, if that's right, that's a massive achievement and a really brave editorial move, actively challenging prejudice on the front page.
Well, if you think of some of the groups from the 60s, I mean, the Supremes or the Motown people, you know, without black people in the magazines, you wouldn't have had a lot because, you know, you had the 60s sound and the Mersey sound, but the Detroit sound. I had an older brother who was much more into the Motown, which I didn't appreciate as much because they weren't the Beatles. No, but I respect now. I mean, it's great because now I can love all of it. It's discovering a lot of things anew.
Oh, just doing this has been a joy, discovering all sorts of random stuff.
Some guys have it, some guys never will. Some guys have it, some guys never will.
It's the whole scene when you splash on Yardley Black Label, the new aftershave that's really out of sight. Be the guy who's got it all. Black Label, get it.
So we turn to the next page, we have a Yardley advert.
Oh, Yardley. Yardley had special meaning for me because in those days in America, and I said we had American television, different television programs had one main sponsor, and the Monkees had Yardley. And in those days, very often, I suppose, if the sponsor paid enough, you'd get the stars of the show doing the commercial and their Yardley commercials with the Monkees in them.
Yes.
And it's always poor Mike tries for the girl, but Davey gets the girl.
Kels Price.
Well, yes and no, because I've got... we'll get on to Davey Jones, because what they were trying to do is, people like Davy Jones, they were innocent, boyish-looking, that didn't threaten us young girls at the time, who were very innocent and, you know, and proper, whereas Mike Nesmith I mean, might have been the more interesting to go out with.
He was definitely the John, wasn't he?
Yes. I think. Here's the first name drop, plonk. I do know Mickey Dolenz, and I've known Mickey because he was also a director and did television shows here.
So. I loved Metal Mickey.
Oh, yes. And he's a lovely, lovely man. Mm. And, I mean, and now he's still wonderfully going. But it's interesting to look back because, remember, the Monkees were a manufactured band, probably the first manufactured boy band. Mm. They answered casting calls and were put together. Funnily enough, this is my thing from what I've heard. I don't think they melded as friends until more recently when they went out on tour.
Yeah, there was no love lost between Mike Nesmith and Peter Tork, no. Sadly. Although there's lovely footage of after Peter died, Mike getting really emotional and sort of saying, you know, I didn't really like him, but it's really moving.
Here's my two cents. I never liked Peter and he never liked me. So we had an uneasy truce between the two of us. He was, as near as I can tell, among his peers, he was very well liked. I know Mickey liked him. But we barely had a civil word to say to each other, hey, Pete, hey, Nez, and that was it. But I was sitting there when my assistant, Melody, got the call. Peter died. And I'm going to do it now. And I broke into tears. So do you. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
Yeah, well, one of my name-dropping things were I had a cousin who was wonderful, a writer, Stanley Mises, who wrote for The New Yorker, and was also covered a lot of the music and rock from the New York scene. And he was staying with me here in London. And I came home and I found a message on the answering machine for me from Mickey. And the next message was for Stanley from Mike Nesmith. Wow. And he said, if the third message is Peter Tork, I'm getting out of here. I mean, what are the odds of having that on an answering machine?
Wow.
Yeah, bless Stanley. But no, back to Yardley. So because the Monkees used to sing Yardley, Black Label, which was, I think, their men's aftershave or something, we all wanted Yardley. I did.
Because of the Monkees?
Of course.
Oh, wow.
And they were great products. But in the same way, because I was trying to think of others, if you remember the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yes.
Which went out, they're being repeated now on a nostalgia channel in the UK. Their sponsor was Kellogg's Corn Flakes. And they used to do corn, as the Beverly Hillbillies did Corn Flakes ads.
Lovely.
But it came from radio. They did that, hence soap operas, because they were selling soaps. Okay.
Yeah.
So everybody, a lot of stars, that's what the sponsors were paying for.
Well, the Monkees, they also did Kellogg's.
Oh.
Quite a lot of Kellogg's, actually, and Kool-Aid.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, obviously the Monkees, you can kind of understand it. They were manufactured to a point, I guess. But have you heard the Rolling Stones Rice Krispies advert?
Vague. It's not for a long time.
Yeah. And you think, sorry, the Stones can do it, the Monkees can do it. Come on.
Well, I don't think the Monkees had much of a say, whereas it's...
No. Well, then Mick would have had a choice, wouldn't he?
No. In those days, no. You were totally tied to your contract. You turned up, you did what you were told, and you went away again. You know...
Kellogg's Rice Krispies, yeah.
Wake up in the morning, there's a snap around the place. Wake up in the morning, there's a crackle in your face. Wake up in the morning, there's a pop that really says Rice Krispies to you and you and you. Pour on the milk and listen to the snap that says it's nice. Pour on the milk and listen to the crackle of that rice. Get up in the morning to the pop that says it's rice. Hear them talking crisp, Rice Krispies.
But also what they used to do is people would do commercials, especially Japan, it's Lost in Translation and that sort of thing, which is you would do it for a country knowing it would not be seen in your home country. That was part of...
There's a lot of Ringo ads from the 70s
really?
In Japan, yeah. Simple Life is one that springs to mind.
You've got to love it. Who amongst us, if they gave us lots of money to film a commercial and promised nobody you know will see it... By the way, can I use this podcast to say I'm available?
Yeah.
Wonderful Egg Pod Express.
We turn to page 3. It's the editor's comments with the byline read by over 1 million weigh-in, zonked out, switched on people.
No, it has to be said as Tony Blackburn or Fluff. Read by over 1 million weigh-in, zonked out, switched on people. Yes. Also, have you noticed, or you might not, it's next to an ad for Sammy, which is a girl. Sammy's ready to wear mini kilt for only 39 shillings and sixpence. Yeah. Do you know who Sammy is?
Well, it says Samantha Just.
Do you know who Samantha Just is?
Nothing to do with Adrian Just, is it?
No, she became Mrs. Mickey Dolenz.
No way.
Yes.
Wow. They
met on a Top of the Pops, and the rest is history. And they had their daughter Amy and all the rest.
Wow.
So, yeah, so they were a swinging couple. Beautiful people indeed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant.
There you go.
Yeah, it's a ready-to-wear mini kilt. Yeah, Samantha. It's a swinging kilt and skinny, and it comes in four beautiful shades at only 39 and 6 for the kilt by itself, or 59 and 6 for the kilt and skinny together.
Wow. But you have to remember as well, it was a glorious time before Amazon and all the rest. And if you there was a lot of online shopping in a different way, which is you clipped out coupons from magazines like this. They asked which color and which size you wanted. You enclosed a postal order in a letter, and that's how you got your dress. And it was great because it would be one great dress or one great mini kilt or something that you really wanted.
Yeah.
And it would turn up. But you had to go to the post office to get your postal order.
Yeah. At the time, I guess, that's what you do, yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Delayed gratification.
Hmm. So, yeah, so editor Terry Hornet is understandably delighted with the latest audit. Going back to Hendrix on the cover, it kind of shows that they valued their connection to the culture more than corporate caution. And with that readership, they could afford to take that risk because the magazine's reach was enormous, wasn't it?
Well, that's wonderful. And also, I mean, Hendrix was brilliant, one of the best guitarists and all the rest ever. But it wasn't like he had a lot of girls screaming after him. It wasn't the teeny bopper equivalent. That wasn't his audience. So they're going for a more mature, discerning audience than some of the other magazines.
London. An African demonstration in the capital is so rare that there had to be a good explanation. The marchers were students who come from Biafra, the Eastern Nigerian Republic, which is claiming independence. Accusing Britain of not being neutral in Biafra's dispute with the federal government, the demonstrators headed for Downing Street to present a petition at number 10. Our own government is concerned because the Shell BP oil refinery is at Port Harcourt, Biafra. The tanker terminal is at nearby Bonny. The breakaway government demands oil royalties, but the companies point out that they are legally obligated to make payment to the federal government. A very delicate situation all round.
So from page 6 to page 9, we have the results of the rave of the year in which readers voted for the hottest pop star. Any thoughts on this?
Oh, where do I begin? Okay, let's get back to Beatlemaniac, but let me set the scene for you, please. Summer of Love, we're literally in the middle of the Summer of Love. The Beatles have released Sgt. Pepper. They just finished around that time, or a month or two before, All You Need Is Love, which went out a worldwide broadcast live, the first time it was ever done. So the Beatles had pretty much populated the earth. Favorite band and all the rest, you wouldn't know it from Rave magazine.
No.
Which makes me ask why. I mean, some of the answers is that they might want it to have been different. Fab magazine covered the Beatles a lot, which is why I loved it. And also, I'm going to surprise you with these, you could buy different purely Beatle magazines. I am passing it over. It's the size of a Fab magazine, but it is American. There are two of these. What's that one called?
It's the very first issue of The Beatles Round the World.
Yep, and I've also got the second edition of Beatles Round the World. I don't think there was ever a third, or I would have had it. I should have asked you to put on white gloves, like in the British Library, to have a look. But, so you could buy all these, and I bought different, purely Beatle magazines, Beatle books, you know, telling where they were born, what their favourite food was and all that. Now, Rave must have very decidedly decided to go in a different direction for whatever reasons. Maybe they were being clever. They were covering an audience that they felt wasn't being covered elsewhere. But, okay, let's go for the top raves. Davy Jones. There's a photo of Davy nibbling on his finger, looking very pensive, very innocent, very boyish. You could bring him home to your parents and your parents wouldn't mind. But he does have long hair, but there you go. Number two is Scott, as the Rave from the Walker Brothers, Scott Engel. Again, a fine-looking man. I'm sure he was great to his parents. The third one is Steve Marriott of the Small Faces.
Yeah.
Again, great musician. Number six is Paul McCartney. I don't believe it. I don't believe in the Summer of Love in 1967 that you didn't get 1, 2, 3, and 4 as the Beatles. Again, maybe it was a totally different Beatle-hating readership. I also wondered whether sponsorship was involved. I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but we know in the 60s, record companies, they encouraged people, whether it was the pirate radios or whatever, financially encouraged sometimes to use different artists and play records and whatever. I'm not saying Rave was like that. I said they just might have identified a different audience. But I just, as a Beatle defender, I find it difficult to believe.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
Well, because I was wondering, we'll go through the top 10. So number 10, Another Small Faces, got Ian McLagan. 9, the highest stone is Mick Jagger. 8, Paul Jones, recently departed from Manfred Mann. And then you've got your first monkey, Peter Tork, at 7. Paul McCartney at 6. Right, it says Paul McCartney's got 591 votes.
Oh, come on, he has more family than that.
And then number 5, Mickey Dolenz, who has almost double with 1,000. Then Cat Stevens gets in there at 4. Steve Marriott at 3. Scott Engel, a.k.a. Scott Walker, 2, and Davy Jones won with 5,733 votes. I don't know. I mean, it's either what you said, or is it like the fact that there's only one Beatle in the top 10? Is it the fickle nature of pop?
I mean, maybe it's I'm lacking something that I'm not recognising.
Empathy.
Obviously.
Poor little, as he's quoted, pint-sized monkey Davy Jones.
Oh, that's charming.
What is it? Yeah, a fantastic achievement for our own pint-sized monkey. And he wasn't even known last year. Davy has certainly proved that you can be small in inches, but big in popularity.
Well, here's another interesting fact about Davy Jones. On Coronation Street, he played Ina Sharple's grandson.
Yes. How did I know that? I don't know why I knew that.
Yep, he was about 9 years old. I think he did a few episodes. So to be Ina Sharple's grandson, and then he was in Oliver on the London West End. But one other pop star was in Coronation Street. Here's your...
From this list?
No, but starter for 10. This is a bonus extra for you.
From the 60s?
Yes.
What, before he was they were famous or after?
Again, when he was a boy. I'm giving you a lot of clues here.
It's not Keith Richards.
No. I would pay for that. Minnie Caldwell saying, and here's my little boy Keith. No, it was Peter Noon, who became Herman from Herman's Hermits.
Yes.
He was...
Ken Barlow's...
No, Len Fairclough's son.
Oh, dear.
Or I think he was Len Fairclough's son.
Oh, dear.
Where do you think you're going, Fairclough?
Wait, out, sir.
Not in this, you're not. Have you seen it out there?
Yes, nothing.
Well, it might be for penguins. Now, you stay here. I'm going to bring the others in.
Again, right. He didn't appear much because his parents were divorced. And in those days, that meant, especially in television terms where you didn't want children around, you didn't see them.
No.
So they were, obviously, Davy Jones had a following. Buddy.
But then I was looking, because I've been looking at other magazines from around this time, and there's more Davy Jones than anything else. He's literally not on every page on some of them, you know, and it seems to be across the board. But it's like you say, it's such a short space of time. But then I suppose things were moving so quickly in that era, weren't they?
Yes, but also for a big series like The Monkees, which had been sold to Britain, the publicity machine from PR was out in force. So, you know, things would have been landing on people's desks all the time. Not denying Davy. I mean, I hate to brag, I've seen the Monkees live in concert.
Superb. Recently or at the time?
Well, when they were alive.
Always best, I find.
Okay, more name dropping. Mickey very kindly gave a box to a few friends and I got to sit with the rock ladies. And my favourite was when Davy Jones on stage was going to do his big solo, and introduced his sister from the box and thanked her for doing his laundry while he was in Britain.
Oh, your sister's the floor.
Well, that's really rock star.
Yeah.
And next time, no starch in the shorts. Yeah. You know, what can I say?
And now I'm with an American gentleman, the head of a family of seven who are just inspecting Carnaby Street.
And we decided to come to Carnaby Street for the girls. They had to come to Carnaby Street. Yeah, they're quite thrilled. I'm amazed.
Had you heard of Swinging London before you came here?
Yes, we had. The children had.
What do you think of the clothes?
Well, I hope they don't buy them too short-skirted. I'm kind of shocked, really. I guess I'm more of the old-fashioned, an inch above the knee is far enough.
What does Swinging London mean to you?
Well, I think it's really groovy. And, like, everything is for the younger generation now. And at night there's discotheques and things like that. I think it's a definite improvement.
Girls are to look even more like boys. Well, that's the message from Twiggy, the beanpole model girl who's turned into a fashion tycoon. Twiggy's just launched her own range of budget clothes that'll sell for around £7 or £8. Good to know that a girl who can earn £80 an hour modelling in New York still holds on to a sense of values. Prices are low, but not the hemline.
We turn to page 10 and 11. We've got a double page spread. It's The Great Male, M-A-L-E, Robbery. It's his and hers. It's the latest rave idea to dress like your boyfriend. Boys envied girls, and their way out gear in fantastic colours. Girls envied boys, and their well-cut trousers and jackets. So, the two just had to meet. Here's Rave's selection of his and hers gear, where the kids have pinched ideas from the boys in the greatest mail robbery in raving history.
It was the greatest time for fashion. You had Mary Quant, you had Bieber. It was funny, it was unisex, basically, because you all shopped in the same shops. Well, it was a time that when women were starting to do things. I mean, granted, there weren't as many women singers as there were male pop groups. We had Cilla, we had Sandy Shaw, Lulu, Dusty. But compared to all, think how many male pop groups there were. But these were strong women who were coming out. So, and it was that way with clothes as well, because it was so fabulous. You have to remember that Britain was still very post-war in the 60s. The war finished in 1945, but rationing in Britain didn't stop completely till something like 1954, which is why you get the Twiggies, because they grew up without having a lot of sugar and unhealthy things.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, the war rationing might have been boring, but it was very healthy. It was wholemeal, the national loaf, what was called the national loaf, was just wholemeal bread, because you didn't waste anything by making white bread. So it was wholemeal bread. It was lots of fruits and vegetables. That's how people survived. So you got the Twiggy figures.
Yeah.
You know, when they were teenagers, they were very svelte, and any designer love to design for them. But so, yeah, boys and girls, long hair, long flowing garments, fab.
A lot of people have said that this only really happened in Carnaby Street and in parts of London. What was going on in Montreal fashion-wise at the time? Was it similar?
Not quite. We knew what was happening in Carnaby Street and King's Road and all the rest, and wanted to be here. Well, it's not a coincidence I moved to Britain when I was 20. Because what was happening here, which was a long time after, but we did get some things. You were able to buy clothes. There was no equivalent to Carnaby Street, but you'd get the odd dress and things that you would grab, and the white high plastic boots, which were great. And because we also had the influence from the Avengers, Emma Peel.
Of course, yes.
You know, the jumpsuits and all that. So we did get, you had to look, but of course, at school it was very strict. And, you know, you were in your uniform, tied your hair back and long skirts and that. But when we got out of school...
Hold on to your paper underwear.
Wonderful Egg Pod Express.
Page 12 to 13, it's your pop questions answered. Lots of you write to us every month wanting information on Davy Jones and all your other favourite pop stars. Here we answer some of the questions. Perhaps yours is among them.
I love this one. What is Davy Jones's real name? Davy's real name is David Thomas Jones.
Exclamation mark. Wow. But it's got all the information. Because obviously, where does Paul Jones have his hair cut? It's at Leonard in London.
That's worried me for a long time, so thank you for telling me.
Yes.
No, it's, but we ate all of this up because we wanted to be at Leonard's in London. We wanted to be in the King's Road.
These footprints lead to the happiest motion picture in many, many, many a year.
Officer, we just got married.
Paul, if the honeymoon doesn't work out, let's not get divorced. Let's kill each other.
Let's have one of the maids do it. I hear the service here is wonderful.
Barefoot in the Park, the barest, rarest, unsquarest love play that ever left Broadway to find happiness on the motion picture screen.
Forget it. They're never coming out.
How long's it been now?
5 days.
That must be a hotel record.
Wait a minute, Paul! Where are you going?
Work. I have to go to work. I don't do this for a living, you know.
Can't you call them and tell them you can't come in today? Tell them you're sick.
I am sick, but I have to go in today.
Last night you promised you'd never leave me. Thank you, Mr. Dooley. Next time you're in New York, just call me up.
Page 1415, we have Rave at the Flicks. All the latest films reviewed by rave girl Lucy Abelson. We've got Stranger in the House with James Mason, Geraldine Chaplin and Bobby Darin. And then Chucker with Luciana Paluzzi, Rod Taylor and John Mills. Three Bites of the Apple, which is an appalling film with David McCallum and Sylvia Koskina.
Ilya Kuryakin from
yeah.
Man from U.N.C.L.E. I mean,
that was a lot better than what this is.
I'm sure, but he was no finer man, no finer
oh,
actor.
Oh, yeah. Hurry Sundown with Michael Caine, Jane Fonda, John Philip Law, Caprice with Doris Day and Richard Harris, and another Jane Fonda film, Barefoot in the Park, along with Robert Redford and Charles Boyer.
Oh, Robert Redford has always been my favourite film star, especially then. I mean, he was a brilliant actor. We sadly just lost him. And he did so much for film by founding Sundance and the Sundance mm-hmm. Festival to help emerging filmmakers. But also, I like to look at him.
Understandable.
Brilliant actor. And Barefoot in the Park was lovely because it might have been, was it his first film?
One off, definitely.
Because it had originally been a stage play by Neil Simon. And I have a feeling he was in the stage play. And then they did the film version. And it was, I saw it not long ago. It is still magical. Mm. And, I mean, Jane Fonda and Robert Redford are...
The beautiful people.
Exactly. And it was a time of beautiful people. So, wonderful film.
Street, the street that is part of the beat at the heart of the scene. You know my auntie Rain will find it quite obscene. Till it's just a teenager's heaven, Carnaby Street.
We've also got film chat, gossip on people and happenings in the film world. And there's a lovely bit in here where it says, Smashing Time is to be filmed in St. John's Wood, starring Lynn Redgrave and Rita Tushingham. Also appearing will be Michael York. Watch out for him. He's a great actor and should go a long way.
Oh, he was glorious. And also he ended up in the Forsyte Saga,
yes.
Which was actually around that. Was it around that time?
Yeah.
Which was the hit of the season. It was the last time the BBC did a major drama in black and white. And it was none the worse for it, but I remember Michael York being in the latter episodes as young Jolly.
Right.
Short for Julian.
Yeah. But Smashing Time is one of my favourite films. I absolutely adore it.
I haven't seen it for years, and now I must.
It's good. It's got an insane ending. No spoilers, but yeah, if you want a real slab of mid-60s psychedelia, go and watch it.
I think that's the word we've been missing, because psychedelia was everywhere. And in the thinking, and what I didn't realise being, again, an innocent 14-year-old from a sheltered background, was just how many people were on drugs when they were making art and music.
Well, you wouldn't. You might just think, why is everything a bit weird? But I guess you wouldn't question it. Beyond that.
No, we would go, you know, heavy man. That's really, that's really fat. That's deep. But we didn't realise where the depth sometimes came from.
Also, we've got Lulu's film, To Sir With Love, is due in August.
Oh, okay. That is still on my top 10 of favourite films. Mm. Sidney Poitier, as an American teacher, come here in the East End. Again, a rough East End, still talking post-war, even though it's, well, 20 years. But Britain didn't build up that quickly. It took a long time after the war. And it still makes me cry. And when Lulu then sings To Sir With Love in the film, I defy you not to sob.
Yes.
It is glorious.
Yeah. And it's weird because there's two, you mentioned, you know, female singers at the time. And Cilla Black's also just filming her film. Work is a four-letter word, which I've not seen, but I've seen some reviews.
Who starred in that? It sounds familiar.
It's directed by Peter Hall. David Warner.
That's what I thought. Who also did Morgan, A Suitable Case for Treatment at that time. You got all these, again, really heavy, deep 60s films that were great about young people striking out, and it didn't always end well.
Mm. My favourite David Warner film is The Man with Two Brains.
Oh.
And also we've got a thing about the music for the film Here We Go Around the Mulberry Bush that's going to be provided by Traffic. The song would also be filmed for the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour TV special, but edited out, but it is available now. But Here We Go Around the Mulberry Bush. I mean, film-wise, it's, you know, they're of a kind, aren't they, this particular era?
Yes, they were made quickly, but it was a youth market, which is great. And one of the stars of Here We Go Around the Mulberry Bush was Barry Evans, who went on to star in the television version of Doctor in the House.
Mm. And another one we don't watch anymore for some reason.
Oh, that's right. Bless. Shall I mention? No.
People can Google if they want to find out.
Yes. But when I came to Britain a few years later, the Doctor in the House series was still running. And my first commission, and I was a teenager at the time, was Doctor in Charge.
Yeah.
So I joined the Doctor family. It was the Richard Gordon books that it was based on, for which I'll always be grateful.
Yeah. Duncan Waring, wasn't it?
Yes, Duncan Waring. It was Robin Nedwell.
Who's the old guy, the horrible, scary one?
Oh, and Professor Loftus, played by Ernest Clarke. He was lovely.
Yeah.
He was the sweetest man.
Music, that's our middle name. Music.
Page 16, we had a full page advert for H. Samuel, and they've got an engagement ring for sale.
Yes, you'll look like $1 million, even if it only cost £14. Now, fair play, £14 wasn't what £14 is today, but I looked it up and the average wage was £20. And you could have spent a little more.
Yeah.
But there are rings that are slightly more expensive. But the main thing is they were affordable. And what price can you put on love? Well, you can put £25, £26, 10 shillings. they look like lovely rings. Can I add, although the average wage was £20 a week, Twiggy at this stage was earning £3,000 a week.
Wowzers.
That's a lot of H. Samuel engagement rings.
That's
And again, you could clip out a coupon and send away, please send me your 38-page full-colour catalogue. So you really did look forward to the post.
Yes, they've also got a competition. You could win a Bahamas honeymoon in the H. Samuel Happy Couples competition. I've no idea what that involved, but
no, getting sunburn.
Page 18 to 19, Tremultuous. It's our rave way of congratulating the Tremolos on their fantastic return to success. For the inside story, Maureen O'Grady reports. And it's basically Brian Paul has left, and it's the Tremolos surviving after the key member leaves.
The great thing is the family tree of all the different rock musicians, because the good ones just kept going from group to group. Then they were called bands to bands. Yeah. And also, rock star begat rock star, because Brian Poole and the Tremolos, they didn't last long, unfortunately, they broke up. But Poole's daughters became Alicia's Attic. Yep. And of course, Chip Hawkes, who was in Brian Poole and the Tremolos, not the Brian Poole part, but the Tremolos part, was the father of Chesney Hawkes.
I once auditioned for Chesney Hawkes.
Oh, what did you do?
Well, it was a few years after his one and only hit, pardon the pun, but he was being relaunched to tour in America. There was an advert in the Melody Maker or the Enemy, one of those. And he wanted a bass player. And I went along. Bear in mind, I was a spotty little kid in a council house in Watford. And
perfect. It's a rise to fame story.
It is. And I didn't have a guitar case, so I used a bin liner and put my bass in this bin liner. Sorted up to London, had this rehearsal. And when I got there, there was basically lots of beautiful blonde-haired identikits to Chesney Hawkes. They all looked like Chesney Hawkes and me with my bin liner. So I didn't get it.
Ah, had it been punk, you would have been straight in with your bin liner.
I know.
That's all. You were just too ahead of your time. Yes, but here's another little pop fact for you. Brian Poole, because, you know, the Tremolos sadly broke up very early on. And Brian Poole then spent 15 years working in his brother's butcher's shop.
Yes.
But to be fair, they did very well and ended up with 15 shops.
Yes.
Before he went back into showbiz. So one forgets as well that a lot of these groups didn't make any money or didn't make money at all because they had managers. The managers might have earned money. And a one-hit wonder, their record contracts weren't exactly fair at that time.
No.
So you could go from having a number one to being back in your brother's butcher's shop.
Yeah, Brian Poole, as well as he became a contractor for vacuum packing machinery, didn't he, for supermarkets?
Oh, I missed that one.
With his butcher's background.
Oh, that's right, yes, he did.
Yeah, but after attending a show in Great Yarmouth, he was eventually persuaded to get back into the music industry by, can you guess?
Go on.
Cannonball.
How wonderful.
But alas, obviously didn't reach the heights.
Well, if Cannonball tell you to go back into the business, you go back into the business.
Rock on, Brian. And they've had a huge success. I mean, they've had a number one with Silence Is Golden. They had a huge hit with Cat Stevens' Here Comes My Baby, which reached number four. And they were just about to release Even the Bad Times Are Good.
One of my favourite songs.
Yeah.
I love that. But speaking of Silence Is Golden, now, in this article, there are some quotes from the Brian Poole's Tremolos. And, quote, "We always have to watch what Chip says in interviews these days," said Dave. "Somehow he never fails to put his foot in it. Like the time he told a German reporter he didn't like Germany, which was a bit stupid. Well, at least I'm honest," said Chip. And then it went on. "People that used to listen to us were considered the older, nicer types. But now we get the raving birds and we prefer that," said Alan. Ricky agreed, then remembered he was married.
Dear.
I think they needed Brian Poole back.
I do, yeah. No wonder he became a butcher. But yeah, apparently they had a TV show. They're talking about a planned TV show in the style of the Monkees. Obviously, that never happened.
I was going to say, I don't think it ever...
It didn't have legs, you know, that one.
Funnily enough, so am I.
Yeah.
Having trouble, George? Why not get yourself a killer spray? Just pump it up and you can spray continuously. One-handed. Fine mist. Coarse spray. Or jet. Here, you can borrow it. Here's your killer spray back, Henry. I've bought one.
Kill garden pests the easy way with killer spray from 49 and 6.
Page 20, we have some adverts. We have the Canadian Novelty Shirt Company, the Queen Alexandra's Royal Army Nursing Corps, and Cameo Tampons.
Now, that was a big breakthrough for girls and women because, again, maybe I had a more innocent background than most, but I doubt it. Although tampons existed, I believe, since the 1930s, they came into their own in the 60s and 70s because girls used to use sanitary pads and things like that, which weren't a lot of fun. And the fact that tampons came out was revolutionary. And a lot of our mothers didn't want us to use it because virgins should not use tampons.
Oh, really?
Yep. I think that's folklore. you know, yeah. And you could still marry with your purity, you know, with all due respect. But that was such a revolution for women and for girls. And it was very liberating. So thank you, tampons.
Mm. Yeah, because the pill was introduced in the UK in 1961, but for married women only.
Quite right.
And it wasn't until 67 that anyone else could take it.
Well, growing up in a very Catholic Quebec, there was no such thing as birth control. I mean, women weren't even allowed to wear shorts out on the street. So, you know, birth control, no.
On page 21, we have a raving report that looks at one of today's most famous faces. And today's face is Twiggy. Page 22, we have an advert for We Don't Smoke. It's the anti-smoking advert.
That is incredible. I didn't realise there were anti-smoking campaigns that early. Way ahead of its time. And more places to go if you don't smoke. 10 cigarettes a day cost £30 a year or more. That's a lot of money then. I mean, now, forget it, you're bankrupt. 15 cigarettes a day cost £45 a year or more. I think you're getting... And 20 a day cost £60 a year or more. So why smoke cigarettes and risk your health? That really is incredibly, you know, far-reaching. What happened to it? Because it certainly didn't carry on the anti-smoking campaigns.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't say who's funding this.
No, that's...
It says advertisement, but there's no actual... Is it the government adverts?
I don't know. That's incredible. But I suppose cigarette ads outweighed safety ads, especially in the 60s. We're getting into, I mean, we're very much into Mad Men territory and Don Draper and the power of advertising.
Mm. Well, 1967 of all years wasn't the year to give up smoking if you're in the music industry, I guess.
No. I mean, that's what I remember most was whenever you'd go anywhere, there was the what can only be called the fog of smoke because everybody smoked. I never did, thank goodness. But it really would, you know, the smoke would cling to your clothes and your hair, and everybody did it.
Page 24, we have the diary of a rave girl. Ronnie and her flatmate, Jan, nerve themselves to discuss a rather embarrassing problem with their temporary lodger, Sonia. Jan at last receives the letter she's been waiting for, and when the two friends reply to a newspaper advertisement, exciting plans get moving.
It really is. You've got to remember the freedom that was in the 60s, which was fantastic, because... Unlike now, where everyone stays at home with their parents till they're 65, well, because they can't afford, sadly, to get places of their own, it was cheap to rent, a lot cheaper, and you flat shared. It was cheaper to rent and you flat shared. There could be any number of girls or boys or girls and boys together in a flat. That's eventually where Man About the House series came. It was scandalous because two girls shared with a boy.
Oh, of course, yeah.
With Richard O'Sullivan.
Yeah.
And that was really, that was quite swinging. But it wasn't, because they were just friends. And it was nice to introduce the concept. But you used to have these flat shares. I mean, my first flat share was incredible. Looking back, I'm sure it should have been condemned, because I don't remember who did the housework, if anyone. But it was, I love this, you know, one of the problems that they were solving was Sonia, their temporary lodger, who had a terrible French guy to stay. And we lied, of course, because none of us could face saying we couldn't stand seeing us spotty men over breakfast. So Jan was very diplomatic, having a chat with Sonia. We don't mind. You could have 10 million people to stay every night if you wanted. Way to go, Sonia. It's just that we're not allowed to have more than three people sharing this flat. And if the landlord thought there was anyone else staying here, he'd chuck us out at once. So you see, it's tricky. She's worthy of the UN. I mean, this brilliant negotiator,
yes,
is Jan.
Perfect.
But they go into this thing about answering an ad. And the ad was, wanted two friendly birds to accompany two friendly guys with minivan for fortnight holiday in Spain. No strings, box 8675. No strings?
No strings, that's fine then.
Oh, well, that's
sounds
all right.
Perfectly safe to me.
Well, you got it in writing. But the girls weren't daft, because the girls do decide to go, who wouldn't? But their reasoning was particularly good to go with two people we don't really know, because there wouldn't be enough time to have rows or anything. It would take 10 days to get over the politeness bit.
Oh, bless them.
Yes. I wonder what they named the children.
Yeah, that's very touch. But then, like, hitchhiking was a big thing at the time as well. And in the '70s, my brother used to go hitchhiking.
Yeah.
But would you do that now? I wouldn't.
No, it was, I mean, I keep saying it was a more innocent time then, or was it just that we didn't hear about things going wrong?
Could be, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Woke up one morning half asleep with all my blankets in a heap and yellow roses scattered all around. The time was still approaching for I couldn't stand it anymore, so Mary goes upon my eider down. I'm just sitting watching flowers in the lane.
Page 26 to page 29, The Big Move. Alan Fluff Freeman, in an exclusive heart-to-heart interview with three members of The Move, singer Carl Wayne, guitarist Trevor Burton, and bassist and founding member Ace Kefford, who throughout this feature is referred to as Chris.
Yeah, The Move, I mean, they were a good band. They got into trouble with Harold Wilson, of all things, because they had an agent, Tony Secunda,
yeah,
and he put out, without The Move knowing about it, he put out a publicity postcard of Harold Wilson in bed with his secretary, Marcia Williams, and basically they got sued, and Harold Wilson won. He did donate whatever money he got to charity, but he got all the royalties from The Move's record. And that
was the biggest one.
Which one was it again?
Flowers in the Rain.
Of course.
To this day, it still goes to charities, apparently.
Well, it was good for the charity, but it wasn't good for Roy Wood, who wrote the song, and later went on to be in ELO and Wizard. But there's a wonderful photo here of The Move. And what I love about all these photos in Rave, it's the long hair, but it's the clean, freshly washed long hair because there was no product. People weren't putting, yes, there was hairspray, but that was so 50s. Mm-hmm. And you didn't use hairspray. People didn't use hairspray in the 60s. But there weren't the hair products in the 60s that there are now. There weren't the gels and the mousses and all the rest. What you saw was beautiful, clean hair, and it was lovely. But a little sidebar, The Move did fire their agent, Tony Secunda, and they hired Don Arden, who's his famous daughter.
Oh, don't do this to me. I do know. I can't think. Go on.
And the answer is Sharon Osbourne.
Yes.
So there's a lot of showbiz. Yes, there are showbiz genes running through the 60s.
But Tony Secunda, I think he was a nightmare. He was, as well as doing that stunt, I mean, he got him to sign a contract on the back of a nude woman's back. He was kind of like the Malcolm McLaren of the 60s, just constantly doing these stunts. And he also got Carl Wayne to smash up TVs and whatnot on stage.
Nice Carl Wayne.
Yeah. And a lot of this interview, Carl, he's talking about authenticity and rebellion, but later went on to write the theme tune for New Faces. And he came second from last in the 1977 Song for Europe. But he also appeared in Crossroads, as well as playing Odd Job John, a servant to King Boggle in Rod Hull and Emu.
Well, there's a name part for you. Crossroads, I remember fondly because some of the things I did when I started were filmed in ATV Birmingham, Kids from 47A, and things like that. And we were in the next studio to Crossroads.
Wow.
So I got to see Nolly.
Oh, wow.
But I learnt you did not sit in Nolly's makeup chair.
Oh, dear.
No, you never sat in Nolly's makeup chair.
Had you?
When Nolly wasn't there, yes. Oh, come on, who could resist? Don't touch that red button. Which red button do you... I wrote for the Chuckle Brothers. Which red button do you mean, Barry? That red button, Paul. Don't touch that red button. Of course you touch the red button.
So, yeah, so again, that song, Flowers in the Rain, is reluctantly, albeit reluctantly, 17 years ahead of Band Aid. It's a charity single, without them knowing.
Which charity did it go to?
I think it was a selection of Harold Wilson's one that shows, but it's gone on to this day, which is, you know, all that. It's a well-played song.
Yes, it is. And Flowers in the Rain is one of the classic symbolic songs of the Summer of Love.
Mm.
Beautiful song. And every time I hear it now, I'll think of Charity. So it's not bad. It's not like a greedy person took the money away from him. But yeah, I would have fired my agent too.
Also in this article, it mentions the Move's forthcoming tour. And obviously, that winter, they did the package tour along with Jimi Hendrix Experience and Pink Floyd, The Nice and Amen Corner. And it was here that Ace Kefford, his sad demise, because some people would say due to his hanging around with Syd Barrett, but he got into the drugs in a bad way. So he's very much like the Brian Jones, Syd Barrett kind of character of the band. It's really sad.
It's sad. The kindest thing I always think about that time is there was a naivety and people didn't realise what where recreational drugs would lead. I mean, again, I stayed clean, but they didn't know what would lead. And in a lot of cases, it was death. It was flashbacks for life. It was brain damage. But on the plus side, there was some great music. No, sorry. Don't.
Say no, kids.
Yes.
And yeah, and especially sad about Ace, it was him who essentially started, he was the power behind forming the band. This was after getting advice from a singer in the Marquee in London, who suggested that he collate all of the top musicians from Birmingham. Because you had Brumbeat as well at the time, didn't you? And he said, get all of the top people you know to form a supergroup, which became The Move. And that person was Davy Jones, not that one, David Bowie.
Yeah, maybe all along, Rave Magazine wanted David Bowie and got the wrong Davy Jones. One. Oh, my goodness. We finally found the answer.
We solved it.
Fabulous Fame. Never before has this historic land been so fully covered as in the latest feature-length travelogue from the world of Burton Holmes. Filmed for the giant screen in glorious Eastman color. See Seville and her great cathedral, Cordoba and her splendid mosque, Granada and the Alhambra, the ancient university city of Salamanca, legendary Segovia with the relics of her Roman past, Toledo, the city of steel and gold, the walls of Avila, Barcelona's beauty and stunning architecture.
Page 30, it's Rave in Spain, an all-happening guide to the Costa Brava Sun Trap of Spain. Where to go, what to do, how much it costs, everything you want to know to have a raving time on holiday. So, rave on. Join the rave team. I think Rave made this, by the way. Join the rave team as they take a fabulous Iberia jet to Spain.
Well, this is the age where cheap travel was starting. And how wonderful it was. I was going to quote Wordsworth, "'Twas bliss to be alive in that dawn, but to be young was very heaven." And that's the way I think of the 60s, and especially the Summer of Love and all the rest, because suddenly you had access to a foreign country, to the Costa Brava. It was cheap, there was sunshine, and they catered for Brits. Because if we recall, only it was probably 2 years later that the Pythons did their sketch about Watney's Red Barrel and all the rest, okay. You know. Because it was cheap, it was there, and they had the money and they could. 'Twas bliss to be young in that dawn.
Mm. The whole thing, there's pages and pages of this, and it really establishes the magazine's identity. And it's not just about pop music. It reflects that high price point and the aspirational readership at the time, I guess.
Yes, I mean, very, very much so. Maybe I'm, again, being naive. I don't remember Fab magazine having those sort of ads, but they probably did, and I was too busy staring at the Beatle photos.
Maybe because it's, you know, they got a million-plus readership, and the amount of adverts that's in here, it must be absolutely raking it in, so.
Well, they must have been. I think one of the things about that time is youth had more disposable income than I can think of at any other time, because you could afford... my first flat was later in the 70s, but we paid £8 a week, and that was between three or four of us.
Yeah.
Now when I go shopping and when I see the large pack of loo paper costs more than my flat did for the week, yeah, that brings inflation home to me more than anything.
Yes.
But people had money. They were working. And also there was full employment at this time. So you could walk out of... If you didn't like a job, you could walk out of it at 5 PM and go, I quit. And you would walk into a new job next morning at 9.
Yeah,
that's how full employment. So they had the money and they spent it. And good on them, after Britain going through the war and then austerity, which basically lasted till the 60s when the music scene exploded. And it was a new Britain, and it was wonderful. And they enjoyed it, because sadly their parents didn't. Their parents had been the wartime generation, and they served and they did their duty and brilliantly. And it was austerity and rationing and all the rest. But who wouldn't prefer a psychedelia and a trip to Spain?
Absolutely. And I guess that fueled the generation gap as well, didn't it? There must be resentment of, they're earning more money than I am, my kids, you know, and they're going out enjoying themselves. I was fighting in the war or whatever. I was in austerity.
Yeah. And also the cry at the time that you always heard, get your hair cut. You know, they were doing the antithesis of what their parents did. They had the long flowing hair instead of the short back and sides. And it fashion changed on a weekly, monthly basis. It's incredible. If you look at 1964 and the Beatles' collarless suits, which were thought really de rigueur, and ending up, then we had the nice miniskirts and all the rest. Psychedelia got more and more. It was a period where culture, music, fashion, philosophy all grew, and these kids were growing with it.
And it was, as you say, so fast moving. There's an interview audio with a girl being interviewed in 67, and they're asking, you know, what fashion she likes, and she says whatever it was, probably miniskirt, I guess. And then she said, but that'll probably change next week because things will have moved on.
And what about the future for yourself?
I know. I never think farther than next week.
What do you think the future of the female figure? Can you tell me anything about that?
I don't know. I wouldn't like to predict anything because it changes so quickly. What I liked last week, I might hate this week.
And it was a week by week. And you think the flower power movement was really like a couple of months, really, wasn't it? It wasn't by December they were sort of taking the mickey out of it.
It's never been over for me, Chris. But you're saying with the miniskirt, what followed the miniskirt was the maxi skirt, you know, down to your ankles. And it was great, the very Victoriana and flowing. But that was the fun thing. Fashion was fun, and it was cheap enough that you could have the odd item. It wasn't like you were living near Carnaby Street and could have a whole wardrobe, but there could be one dress. You had those boots which would go with everything. You would have a scarf. So you can have the gist of it. Yeah. You can have bits of it. You bought into bits of the dream, and that was enough.
But this article, reading through it, and it's sort of reviews of various places they've been to eat or to dance or rave or whatever. But I get the impression, reading between the lines, that anything that might have been a freebie for the writers of this gets preceded by the word fabulous. And so I suspect the flight was free because they put this fabulous Iberia Carvel jet. Lots of other things get mentioned, but only a few get... In the tiny fishing village of Rosas, the rave team were made welcome at the Hotel Coral Player, a fabulous hotel placed right on the water's edge. And also in La Scala, the gang spent a fabulous evening at the Club LA Nanka until the wee small hours. I reckon they're getting the freebies, personally.
Oh, I think it's just coincidence.
Oh, did we?
Yes, I think it was an honest review.
Yes.
I mean, the whole magazine, to be honest, was probably freebies in some form.
Yeah.
But to be fair, it gave the readers what they wanted to see.
Like pirate radio.
Yeah.
People wanted to hear that, and that was lots of freebies going on.
It did, but often in the wrong hands.
Yeah. But it's a fascinating chunk, slice of life at the time. The only bad thing, they're a bit too enthusiastic about bullfighting.
Yes, I saw that as well.
Yeah.
I wonder if the bull endorsed them.
that's the end of part one. However, you can listen to the whole interview at patreon.com/eggpod. Join us next week for part two and find out who made the charts, the new singles, new albums, and much more. To support this podcast and to access bonus content, please subscribe to patreon.com/eggpod. And again, this issue is online at iamtheeggpod.com, where you'll also find an exclusive playlist related to this particular episode. But that's it for now. See you next time. Bye.